This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You can book the restaurant, you can pick the perfect outfit, you can dim the lights, order the wine, but when the moment comes, what actually makes a kiss unforgettable? Is it the technique? Is it the timing? The nerves, perhaps? Or permission? Or have we inherited ideas about kissing that we don't even realise are guiding us? Because for centuries, people have believed a kiss could unite souls, measure desire, sell lipstick, and even signal power. Well, joining me is Professor Katie Barclay from Macquarie University, author of The Kiss, A History of Passion and Power. Katie, welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me.
When we think about perfect kiss, we usually think chemistry. Historically, what did people believe made a kiss powerful?
Well, if we go back to the beginning, right, which is really in the Christian tradition, or at least for us who are Europeans or come from the descendants of Europeans, a lot of our ideas about the kiss come from this medieval Christian tradition. And what they believed was happening was when they kissed, and you had to kiss on the mouth, and you had to kiss with an open mouth, was that you exchanged your spirits and you mingled with each other, and it formed a union. And then they have to figure out how that works. You know, they're all good scientists. They're sitting around going, well, how do you get the mingling? And so they thought it was breath, right? And they thought if you exchange breath when you kiss, it created this mingling that produced love. And that was a love that was for the community. It wasn't just a sexual love, a romantic love. It was for everybody.
So were kisses always romantic, or did they carry some sort of religious meaning as well?
No, I mean, romantic kisses historically were only one tiny type of kiss, and not even the most interesting or important in some ways. Kisses happened in church. You're part of the service, because when you joined as part of the body of Christ, that was the Christian community joined together, and they kissed each other as to show their love and to exchange love and to create love, because that exchange of breath created love, even if you didn't want it. But also we see kissing in contracts and in medieval contract law. So if you make an agreement with somebody, nowadays you might shake hands, right? And then the past, people used to kiss. Especially if it was important. The more important the contract, the more important it was that you kissed each other at the end of the contract. And that idea continues, like people are kissing after contracts well into the 1700s, right? So this is a really long idea. And so in that context, people are kissing each other for all sorts of reasons. And yes, okay, you also kiss for romantic reasons, but it wasn't really the most important of them all in the way that today the romantic kiss is central.
That's absolutely fascinating. I'm also fascinated by how passionate some of the historical descriptions of kissing are. Were people encouraged to linger and really indulge in a kiss?
Yeah, which is, I think, the most strange thing, I guess, to us as modern people, is that you think that a long and passionate kiss would be something that you only do with your most intimate of parties, right? But we have all these wonderful examples, especially the ones that I quite like, are people fantasizing about kissing Jesus. So, they're Christians, they love Christ, and they want to demonstrate that they have a really close union with him. And then they have these elaborate, very detailed fantasies about basically a sexual union that involves lots of kissing that has got tongue, and it's deep, and it takes a long time, and you have lots of kisses, and they describe all of this at length. And men describe it, and women describe it, and they're adopting their the Song of Songs, the Bible, firstly, they're kind of using that example to kind of put Christianity behind these very passionate kisses.
Never thought about that, a bit of a pash with Jesus.
Yeah.
At what point does the kiss move from something, I suppose, spiritual or something sensual to something sensual? Or were those ideas always intertwined?
They are. And so people, of course, kiss for romantic reasons, even in the medieval period. And there's lots of romantic love songs and poetry and things. So that idea is very much there. What sort of kind of happens over time is it's that the more religious uses of the kiss and the contract uses of the kiss, they all disappear, right? And so they're kind of sometimes they haunt us. People still believe, perhaps today, that when you kiss, that you kind of join souls. Certainly when you get married, that kind of idea of a joined soul remains an important part of our romantic language, whether we believe it, I don't know. But so some of those kind of ideas continue. But what kind of happens is that its practical uses disappear, and at different rates for different things. So contract kisses kind of disappear in the 1600s and 1700s. And then kissing your friends when you greet them, that sort of disappears in the 1800s. Turns out in the country, some people kiss for longer. The Icelandic people apparently continue to kiss on their mouth with their friends well into the 19th century, and the people all comment on it. So they're kind of following away, I guess, at different speeds. And then eventually in the 20th century, you're kind of only got the kiss between intimates left standing. And the other kind of obvious kiss is also people kiss their children, although whether you should kiss your children on the lips is a bit controversial too.
We're chatting with Katie Barclay from Macquarie University about what history can teach us about the passionate kiss and how our ideas about romance have shifted over centuries. We want to hear from you as well. What makes a perfect kiss? 0427 569 949. Katie, now there was even something called a kissometer. What was that, and why were people trying to measure kissing?
Well, at the start in the 20th century, scientists decided they wanted to measure emotion. And so they were kind of, they thought that emotion could be measured through electric pulses in your body. And the basic idea is the more excited you are, the more emotion you're experiencing. And the most famous example of this that everybody knows about is actually the lie detector test, right? So you get strapped up to the machine, and if you lie, you get too anxious and all your systems go, your pulse beats and your electricity raises, and we know that you're lying. So the kissometer works in exactly the same principle, except that what we do is we strap you into the machine, or you actually hold the device, and then you kiss each other. And if there's a lot of electric charge there, or some of them might measure your heartbeat, if you've got a strong pulse, then that kiss is passionate. Wow. And if there's no measurement, then it's like flat. Right? So it's kind of fun, right? So the scientists try it. We don't really get very accurate or good results, shockingly enough, from it. But what happens, though, is everybody, the public, just loves this idea. Like, yeah, let's measure how passionate my kiss is. And so then it becomes an arcade machine. And you might even have seen it. Sometimes they still exist in these old, historic arcades and things. But you can go and you just hold it. And they usually measure very scientific measures, like dead fish to wowee, you know. So you're kind of, when you kiss and you hold the meter, it'll tell you how passionate you are.
I mean, if you're dating someone and you kiss them, they're terrible at kissing. I mean, that machine would be fabulous, wouldn't it? Because it's sort of, how do you say, look, I don't like the way you kiss. I mean, you could say, look at the machine, we're not compatible. It tells us, go.
Exactly.
How handy would that be?
Now, it would be, especially if you didn't hold very tight, and that way you could zig it.
Now, why do you think we've been so determined to prove that a kiss is good, you know, whether through religion, science, or even advertising?
That's a great question. I mean, I think the reason scientists were kind of doing it is that they saw it all around them. People were doing it, and they're like, that's a weird thing for a bunch of humans to do. Why are they doing that? And so then they tried to look at evolution and evolutionary science to kind of give biological explanations for why we might kiss. They actually don't have much luck there either, by the way. There's not really good scientific reasons for kissing. So instead, it seems to come out of this tradition that we see from the medieval period onwards, where it's just a big part of our social life. It's a custom that we inherit, and that we, because it's important to us and it's important to our parents and we learn it as children, that we learn to value it. And we valued it so much, we just kept doing it for hundreds of years.
When, for a long time, stealing a kiss was portrayed as romantic. When did society start to rethink that idea?
That's always been an interesting, a bit controversial, right? Partly because if a kiss can make you fall in love, right, then what can happen is if you kiss somebody without their consent, then suddenly they love you, right? Mm. And from a modern perspective, that's a concerning implication, right? That you could, you know, assault somebody effectively and cause them to actually create love. And so even in the medieval period, those kinds of examples sometimes raise questions. I think there are kind of going, oh, that's a bit interesting. But really, I think it's with feminists that we get the really strong kind of objections to people having their kisses stolen. And we see that as, in the 19th century. And there's actually kind of two lines of this. There's one that's the feminists, and they're like, girls should not be subject to men just groping them and kissing them in public. And this is, you know, they have a right to autonomy and to choice. And we should, allow women to make have consent and to make choices. And so we have those women in the 19th century kind of arguing that. But they're actually also arguing it for children, which is really interesting as well. Because lots of people, perhaps even now, they see a cute baby, they want to kiss the baby, right? Who doesn't want to kiss the baby? That's actually dangerous because there's lots of germs. But also the children's rights activists, even in the 19th century, are going, it's not a dog or a cat. You can't just, you know, pat it. It's a baby. It's a human being. You know, really, a child should be treated as we would want it to be treated as it is older. And so there's kind of a push around children's rights that kissing and consent should be a thing. And I think we see that now as well in discourses around children.
Where do we get where do we get a kissometer from?
Where do you get one from? Try your local arcade shop, but it's quite easy to make, right? So just go online and Google how to make a kissometer.
You know,
and
I will.
Go to your local, you know, Bunnings, and you'll be sorted.
I'm going to make one. I'll send you a photo when I get it done. Katie, one final quick question because we've gone into news time. If you had one from all the research you've done, if there was one bit of advice or one thing that we always get wrong, what would you tell us?
Oh, hard question. I think what did we get wrong? You've actually stumped me. There we go. No, I think the advice is just to kiss passionately and to really kind of go for it. Oh. It's perhaps what the history lessons are telling us.
I love a good kiss. And Katie, so good to chat with you. It's a fascinating topic. Thank you for chatting with us. I'll send you a photo of my kissometer.
Excellent. Thank you.
That is Katie Barclay from Macquarie University.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.